Hello, everyone. This is Stephen Cohen for the podcast Quantitative Investigations. This is episode 8, Trump, FBI, and Corruption. We are podcasting today from Englewood, Florida, as opposed to Colorado Springs, Colorado. And we are minus Goose the Engineer. Unfortunately, Goose decided he wanted to see his family for Christmas and New Year's. I can't even imagine why. But yet, that is what he chose to do. So, it's just us flying solo. So, what we're going to do today is we're going to engage in a little update. There's been a lot going on. First of all, let's talk about the $1.7 trillion omnibus bill that was just passed and is about to be signed by President Biden. For those who've listened to my episode on federal budget and inflation, you all know what this means. It's another $1 trillion in debt, and we all know what debt does to the budget. As a matter of fact, because of increased interest rates, the cost to service the debt in the next fiscal year will be about $440 billion. So, again, for those who've listened to the Federal Budget and Inflation podcast, you know what that means. Next, we want to give an update on the 2020 election. In that episode, which I guess I posted about a month and a half ago, I stated that the 2020 election was possibly stolen, and it wasn't necessarily by the individual fraudulent efforts in some states, but it was due to the FBI. The FBI's manipulation via Facebook and other big tech companies to hide the Hunter Biden laptop story, and that the Media Research Center conducted a poll that stated that around 17% of people would have changed their vote, and I estimated that would have been about 25 million people. Since that time, Elon Musk finalized his purchase of Twitter, and has been dumping files on the obfuscation and censorship of the Hunter Biden story. And he's been working through Barry Weiss and Matt Taibbi, and I think there's a Mike Schellenberger as well. They have been actually posting the Twitter file releases. What these releases have clearly showed is that the FBI was in deep coordination with Twitter. And this was actually confirmed by Elvis Chan. He's an FBI agent. He, in testimony in a lawsuit by the state of Missouri and the state of Louisiana, stated that the FBI met weekly with big tech to coordinate on this issue. So, this actually changes my estimation to now, there's probably a 90 to 95% chance that the election was stolen. It was stolen by the FBI in coordination, collaboration with Facebook, Twitter, and I'm not sure whom else. And this was also confirmed by a TIPP poll that stated that, unfortunately, I don't remember the statistic, but I think 50% of the people would have changed their vote if they knew about this Hunter laptop story. I don't necessarily believe that it would be that number. I believe the number would be between 10 and 20 million people would have changed their vote based on the polling data. But of course, you and I know how accurate polling data is, but there was clearly a very large impact on hiding that story. The FBI knew it. The FBI hid it. The FBI knew that they were lying to big tech, and the FBI knew that, in turn, big tech was lying to the American people. Now, there were crimes committed here, okay? Crimes. The FBI engaged, and we'll keep it to Twitter and Facebook for now, engaged Twitter and Facebook to do their censorship, making Twitter and Facebook agents of the federal government. Okay, that means because the FBI was engaging in First Amendment violations, so was Twitter and Facebook, because they were agents of the federal government. Not only that, the Twitter file dump shows that the FBI paid Twitter $3.4 million. Now, a couple of crimes there. Number one, I'm sure that money was not appropriated by Congress. So now you're fraudulently using government funds. That's fraud. You're using those funds to commit a crime. That's wire fraud. That also can be considered racketeering. They're essentially bribing Twitter employees and Twitter itself to commit crimes. Right? That's racketeering, in my opinion. And you can look up, you for yourself can look up the definition of racketeering. To me, then, that makes the FBI and the DOJ a racketeering influence corrupt organization. And of course, it's also wire fraud. So there are actual crimes that have been committed by FBI and Twitter and Facebook. Is anyone going to do anything about it? I doubt it, because somehow these people seem to escape justice, maybe one day. But it does lead to a much larger issue. So I was talking with a family member of mine, telling this person about the Twitter file dump, asking if this person heard about it. And this person said, no. And he goes, well, and he goes, I don't listen to conservative media. The notion that there's conservative media and liberal media is so false. If there were degrees of falseness, it would be horrendously false. But it is a false premise that there's liberal media and conservative media. There is news, and I meant to say liberal news and conservative news. There's news, and then there's propaganda. And what this person in my family was getting was propaganda. He didn't know about one of the hugest stories in U.S. history, or U.S. political history. He didn't know about it. And my wife confirmed this. Just being intellectually curious, you know, my wife looked on conservative news outlets and saw the Twitter story. She went to NBC, nothing on it. CNN, nothing on it. Other liberal outlets, nothing on it. You either are getting news or you're getting propaganda. And people have no idea how dangerous this is. Have no idea. Again, one of the only truthful things that Barack Obama said was that people don't know fact from fiction. And now, of course, like I said before, meant as a pejorative against Republicans, but it's absolutely true. People do not know fact from fiction, and the people who are manipulating the news are so stupid that they have no idea where this can go. Have no idea where this can go. Let's talk a little bit about January 6th. I'm not going to really discuss that in detail in this particular episode for one main reason. Neither I nor anyone else outside of a few people really knows what happened on January 6th. If you think you know what happened on January 6th, then you are consuming propaganda. You don't know. Why do I say that? Number one, it's a known fact that Donald Trump approved the use of 20,000 National Guard troops. Nancy Pelosi turned it down. The sergeant at arms at the time turned it down. Number two, there are numerous videos showing Capitol Police letting protesters in. There's a video showing three Capitol policemen in front of glass doors And then all of a sudden, they walk away, and Ashley Babbitt gets shot. And the police, the Capitol Police officer that shot Ashley Babbitt, who was unarmed, has never been brought to justice. Never been brought to justice. The FBI also had an informant in the Proud Boys. They had an informant. They knew ahead of time what was going to happen. Supposedly, they knew ahead of time what was going to happen. Did anyone notify the president? No. Christopher Wray, the FBI director, was grilled in a congressional hearing about whether or not the FBI had informants posing as Trump supporters inside the Capitol before the protesters came in. He would not answer the question. I'm telling you right now, if you think you know what happened on January 6th, you are consuming propaganda. Because you don't, and I don't. But I do know this. The FBI is involved. It is clear the FBI is involved. Once again. So the FBI has been involved in tampering with the 2016 election, the 2020 election, and now they're trying to do it to the 2024 election. The FBI. The FBI is a racketeering, influence, corrupt organization. And now I'm going to get to at least the third thing that they did, let alone other failures. For example, in the Parkland, Florida high school shooting, the FBI had over two dozen reports of Nicholas Cruz being a problem and owning guns. What did they do about it? They did nothing about it. They let the shooting happen. Why did they do that? No one knows. Nobody knows, and no one's been fired. If you don't think the FBI is a problem now, let's go through what the FBI did to the Trump campaign when it came to Crossfire Hurricane, which was the 2016 election. So, the basic order of events. This started when Jeff Sessions was being confirmed as Attorney General. He recused himself from looking into any election irregularities. He did so at the behest of Rod Rosenstein and others. Rod Rosenstein was the assistant attorney general at the time. Why did Jeff Sessions do that? He didn't need to do that. But Rod Rosenstein and others wanted Jeff Sessions out of the way. Jeff Sessions did not need to recuse himself. And unfortunately, President Donald Trump, did not have the wherewithal to see what was going on. He did not have the wherewithal nor the people around him to let him know that the quote-unquote swamp was a lot deeper than he thought. And you can tell by some of his actions. Once Jeff Sessions had recused himself, President Trump should have just canned him immediately. Said, no, you're not going to do that. If you're going to recuse yourself, then I'm withdrawing your nomination. We're going to go with somebody else. He should have done it. He should never have left Jim Comey in place. Jim Comey was an extraordinarily corrupt person. And you can tell because when he made his announcement before the 2016 election that he was reopening the investigation into Hillary Clinton emails, why would you do that right before an election? And he had no right to do that. That would have been the job of the Attorney General. He left Jim Comey in place. He left Andrew McCabe in place. He left some of the most despicable people in place because he just didn't know better. So, Jeff Sessions recuses himself. One of the basic pretexts for the whole Trump-Russia collusion investigation was the DNC emails were hacked by Russians. Supposedly, it was never proven. I've never seen any direct proof. And there's a sideshow to all this. The sideshow is that a gentleman named Seth Rich, who was a DNC staffer, supposedly stole DNC emails and had them on a laptop. He was executed. When he was walking home, someone went behind him, shot him in the head. The DC police said it was supposedly a botched robbery. Nothing was taken. This man was executed. But supposedly they did not find any DNC emails on any of his devices. Okay. There's nothing I can do about that. It was a sideshow. It is an open case. We don't know who executed this person, and actually, the FBI is not even looking into it. Stop looking into it. So as I said, the DNC email hack was the pretext for the Crossfire Hurricane investigation to see if the Russians influenced the election and Donald Trump. As part of the documents that were used to get what are called FISA warrants, Foreign Intelligence Service Act warrants. Glenn Simpson, who owned a company called Fusion GPS, paid Christopher Steele for information on Donald Trump. Christopher Steele came up with a 16-memo compendium called the dossier. This dossier was used in FISA warrants on Carter Page, who was a Trump staffer, and some others. And for the last renewal of this FISA warrant, the FBI relied on an email that was forged by Kevin Kleinsmith to state that Carter Page was not a CIA asset, when in fact Carter Page was a CIA asset, and an email from the CIA to the FBI stated that he was an asset. Kevin Kleinsmith forged it to add the word not and actually pled guilty. And I will discuss that in a little more detail later. So as part of Crossfire Hurricane, Michael Flynn, for some reason, and this was in President Obama's words, President Obama did not want Donald Trump to hire Michael Flynn. And he made it clear that he was not a fan. And apparently, Obama had fired Flynn as the head of Defense Intelligence Agency in 2014. And Obama cited insubordination on the part of Flynn. Because Flynn did not think that Obama was being aggressive enough on combating Islamic terrorism. So I'm going to start looking at reading excerpts. What I try to do when I'm talking about any court case is I try to get the court documents. And pretty much the one court document that sums up everything about the Flynn case is found in a document called the United States District Court for the District of Columbia, United States of America versus Michael T. Flynn, CRIM number, it's CRIM period number 17-232 parentheses EGS, and it's entitled The Government's Motion to Dismiss the Criminal Information Against the Defendant Michael T. Flynn. So, this document kind of recaps, and it doesn't kind of, it actually recaps what the FBI did to Michael Flynn. And it's pretty disgusting. They wanted to get rid of him. And I actually downloaded the or I wasn't able to download it, but there are actually notes. There are handwritten notes, and I found it on www.foxnews.com/politics/Michael-Flynn-FBI handwritten notes. Get him, lie-fired. Okay, so you can find these handwritten notes. They were trying to strategize on how to get Michael Flynn to lie. That's what they were trying to do. And it's pretty disgusting. But I'm going to read some quotes. And this is and coming from page two. After a considered review of all the facts and circumstances of this case, including newly discovered and disclosed information appended to the defendant's supplemental pleadings, the government has concluded that the interview of Mr. Flynn was untethered to and unjustified by the FBI's counterintelligence investigation into Mr. Flynn. A no longer justifiably predicated investigation that the FBI had, in the Bureau's own words, prepared to close because it had yielded an absence of any derogatory information. The government is not persuaded that the January 24th, 2017 interview was conducted with a legitimate investigative basis and therefore does not believe Mr. Flynn's statements were material, even if were untrue. Moreover, we not believe, it's kind of a typo there, but we not believe that the government can prove either the relevant false statements or their materiality beyond a reasonable doubt. So what happened? They were trying to get rid of Flynn. I don't really know why. All I've seen is a bunch of suppositions that Flynn knew the dirty laundry of the Department of Justice, the intelligence community, and the FBI, and they wanted him gone. But I'm not really sure why they did this. But basically, the chronology is, and this is all comes from this one court document. August 16th, 2016, the FBI opened up a counterintelligence investigation into Flynn as part of the larger Crossfire Hurricane umbrella into the presidential campaign of Donald Trump. Because again, they suspected coordination with Russian officials, yada, yada. Right. And they based the investigation into Flynn on a couple, on basically three facts. They call them articulable factual basis, which was three facts. Mr. Flynn's service as a foreign policy advisor to the Trump campaign, his publicly documented connection to state-affiliated Russian entities, and the fact that he had traveled to Russia in December 2015. Okay. Big deal. Now, after 4 months of this investigation, the FBI determined that there was nothing there and they were ready to close it. And basically citing no derogatory information. Then there was a phone call. There was a phone call between Michael Flynn and Russian Ambassador Sergei Kislyak in December of 2016, which supposedly touched on matters of foreign policy. Excuse me. Communications between an incoming administration and a significant foreign government. The Russians and the United States may not be friends, but there's a significant relationship there, whether it's hostile or friendly. And communications between an incoming administration and a foreign government are legitimate. They are legitimate. And the NSA was surveilling this and apparently made the transcripts available to the FBI. So, and this document says the FBI had in their possession transcripts of the relevant calls. Now, Peter Strzok, this gentleman, was so happy because as of January 4th, 2017, the matter had not been closed. The FBI had not closed the investigation into Flynn yet. So Strzok, and according to this court document, immediately relayed the quote-unquote serendipitously good news to Lisa Page, the special counsel to FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe, remarking that our utter incompetence actually helps us. And Strzok instructed agents to keep this investigation open. So then came we get close to the actual interview, which actually got Flynn in trouble. James Comey decided that they were going to investigate Flynn, but they did not tell, and intentionally did not tell the Trump administration. They also didn't tell the Trump administration about the Flynn Kislyak communications. Okay. So basically, on January 24th, 2017, Comey decided that to send the agents to Flynn's office, interview him without an attorney. They interviewed him, and then based on that interview, decided that they were going that there was some lie and that they were going to prosecute him. And in a and here's and here's how smug James Comey is. This is how smug this guy was. In this court document, it states, in a December 2018 interview with MSNBC and NBC News analyst Nicole Wallace, this is being James Comey, stated this course of action was something, and this is a quote, something I probably wouldn't have done or gotten away with in a more organized administration. So this guy, and you can see this on YouTube, this guy tried to take advantage of a quote unquote disorganized administration to go ahead and surreptitiously interview Michael Flynn without the Trump administration knowing. And of course, none of this is legitimate. None of it is legitimate. The whole proceeding was thrown out. The charges against him were thrown out. Or I should say, the government tried to have the charges dismissed. I think actually the judge took so long to make a ruling that President Trump actually had to pardon Michael Flynn. That I don't remember. But this was a pretty disgusting act on the part of the FBI. But that is basically what happened. Again, you can read the whole thing for yourself. It's about 20 pages. And again, the document is called Government's Motion to Dismiss the Criminal Information Against the Defendant Michael T. Flynn. Crim number 17-232 parentheses EGS, United States of America versus Michael T. Flynn. Lovely. So this was the Flynn part. Now let's get to Glenn Simpson, all right? Because Glenn Simpson is a key operator here. Very, very key operator. All right, just making sure the old equipment's working. So Glenn Simpson did, and there is a document. He has his testimony is 312 pages. And the document is titled Senate Judiciary Committee, U.S. Senate, Washington, D.C. Interview of Glenn Simpson, Tuesday, August 22nd, 2017. And it says the interview in this matter was held at the Hart Senate Office Building commencing at 9:34 a.m. It's a long document. I was trying to glean some useful information out of it. I didn't really get as much as I could. It's a long read. It takes a long time. I just didn't get as much as I wanted to out of it. But here are some quotes. Glenn Simpson, to be totally clear, you know, what people call the dossier is not really a dossier. It's a collection of field memoranda, of field interviews, a collection that accumulates over a period of months. And the first memo was issued in June of 2016. So here's a question from the Senate panel. So it is widely reported that you engaged Christopher Steele to do part of the research, the opposition research on candidate and Trump. Is that true? And he answered yes. So in May or June 2016, you hired Christopher Steele to, as you've just indicated, find out what he could about Donald Trump's business activities in Russia. Did something in particular trigger that assignment? Simpson answers, no, I don't think I can point to something in particular as a trigger. Now, Christopher Steele is a former UK intelligence asset. He was familiar to the FBI. There is a trail, a money trail that goes from Fusion GPS run by Glenn Simpson to the Clinton campaign through Perkins Coie and I think a few others. I'm not really getting into that here because I just can't. I just can't get into everything. But Glenn Simpson did hire Christopher Steele to do this Oppo research. And the Oppo research, now, from this Oppo research, what you do is then you go to the Horowitz report. Right? The Horowitz report. So, Inspector General Michael Horowitz prepared a report. And it was basically a report to study. And the name of the report is it's redacted for public release, Office of Inspector General, U.S. DOJ, review of four FISA applications and other aspects of the FBI's Crossfire Hurricane investigation. So what you want to do is this is a long report. It's 478 pages. Everyone should take a look at the executive summary. Because the executive summary has some pretty, it basically tells you what you need to know. And although it's not as scathing as I would have liked, but it does, there are 17 flaws with the FISA applications that Mr. Horowitz noted. And I'm going, and there's a bunch of other information in here. It's a long report. It is a long report. It does speak to significant reform that is required at the FBI. Significant reform. So it states here, and this is on page Roman numeral 8. as more fully described in Chapter 5, based upon the information known to the FBI in October 2016, the first application contained the following seven significant inaccuracies and omissions. Number one, omitted information the FBI had obtained from other U.S. government agency, that's the CIA, detailing its prior relationship with Page, that's Carter Page, including that Page had been approved as an operational contact for the other agency from 2008 to 2013, and that Page had provided information to the other agency concerning his prior contacts with certain Russian intelligence officers, one of which overlapped with facts asserted in the FISA application. Okay, that's number one. The FBI knew Carter Page was a CIA asset, and they omitted it from the FISA application, which would have basically resulted in the denial of the application. Okay, included a source characterization statement asserting Steele's prior reporting had been corroborated and used in criminal proceedings, which overstated the significance of Steele's past reporting and was not approved by Steele's handling agent as required by the Woods procedures. So, the Steele dossier, the information in it, was not vetted. And oh, by the way, during a separate legal proceeding in the UK, Christopher Steele stated that he did not corroborate any of the allegations in the Steele dossier. Number three, omitted information relevant to the reliability of Person 1, a key Steele subsource who was attributed with providing the information in Report 95 and some of the information in Reports 80 and 102 relied upon in the application. Namely that, number one, Steele himself told members of Crossfire Hurricane Team that Person 1 was a boaster and an egoist and may engage in some embellishment. And two, the FBI had opened a counterintelligence investigation on Person 1 a few days before the FISA application was filed. I'm assuming this was Igor Danchenko, who was prosecuted by the Durham Commission. He went to trial. He was acquitted. I'm assuming that's who this person is. Number four, asserted that the FBI had assessed that Steele did not directly provide to the press information in the September 23rd Yahoo News article based on the premise that Steele had told the FBI that he only shared his election-related research with the FBI and Fusion GPS, his client. This premise was incorrect and contradicted by documentation in the Woods file. Steele had told the FBI that he also gave this information to the State Department. Okay, so Christopher Steele did actually provide information to Yahoo News for an article. Omitted Papadopoulos's consensually monitored statements to an FBI asset in September 2016, denying that anyone associated with the Trump campaign was collaborating with Russia or with outside groups like WikiLeaks in the release of emails. So Papadopoulos was another person who was wrapped up in this Crossfire Hurricane counterintelligence investigation. So it goes on. And those were the seven deficiencies that were identified for the first first FISA warrant. The renewal applications had another 10 issues. And I'm not going to go through these. But it basically goes on. It's basically the government omitted facts that clearly would have resulted in these FISA warrants being denied. And they lied to the FISA court. Perjury. Plain and simple perjury. Why no one has been prosecuted for that, I have no idea. So, you now have an illegitimate Steele dossier used in the investigation to open up, to basically violate the Fourth Amendment rights of Carter Page, is it George Papadopoulos, Paul Manafort, and someone else. I cannot remember the name. Now, what makes a lot of this worse is Adam Schiff. So Adam Schiff held closed-door hearings. Now, the transcriptions of this testimony was distributed, and I looked at it. I didn't look at it. There were like 57 witnesses. I didn't look at all 57, but I did look through a fair amount to try and find out if anyone had determined whether or not anyone identified any information that the Trump campaign had colluded with Russia. There's a transcript from Renat Achmetshin. And the question is, are you aware, do you have any information that you're in possession of or aware of that then candidate Donald Trump and his campaign colluded with the Russian government to rig the election, for lack of a better word? Answer, I am not aware of any of this information. Are you aware of any, this is another question, are you aware of any information or evidence that any employees, officially or unofficially, of Donald Trump himself worked with the Russian government and or Russian officials to affect the 2016 U.S. presidential election? Answer, I am not aware of any of his contact or work. I'm not sure that answered the question. James Clapper. James Clapper was an intelligence official. I think he was actually director of national intelligence under Obama. The question goes, so are you aware of any evidence that the vote outcome of the 2016 presidential election was manipulated through cyber means? Answer, no, I'm not aware of any of this information. Question, on point number two, with regard to these parameters, which the ranking member mentioned in his opening, deals with collusion and the Russian activities, including links between Russia and individuals associated with political campaigns. You had testified in the past that you saw no evidence of collusion between the Trump campaign and the Russian government. Is that still the case, or has that changed? Mr. Clapper, well, and his answer is, well, no, it's not. I never saw any direct empirical evidence that the Trump campaign or someone in it was plotting/conspiring with the Russians to meddle with the election. That's not to say that there weren't concerns about the evidence we were seeing, anecdotal evidence, but I do not recall any instance where I had direct evidence of the content of these meetings. It's just the frequency and prevalence of them was a concern. Okay. Terrific. So, and I looked through probably 10 of these, and none of these transcripts actually had any evidence. Anyone, let me say this in English. I looked through about 10 of these transcripts. No one identified any evidence that the Trump campaign had actually colluded with Russia. Here's the problem. Adam Schiff was lying. He was lying in the news. There's this, there's a CBS article, CBSnews.com. The article is called Rep. Adam Schiff Says There's Plenty of Evidence of Russia Collusion in Plain Sight. It's dated August 5th, 2018. There's a Huffington Post article. It's HuffPost.com. Adam Schiff, Trump, Russia Collusion. It's dated February 17th, 2019. So, for almost 2 years after these transcriptions, because these testimonies were done in 2017, he's still talking about collusion with the Russians when he knew that it was a lie. And that's what Adam Schiff was doing. So in the end, with all of this, it is a really, really sad state. By the way, I'm going to get to Kevin. Before I forget, I'm going to get to Mr. Kleinsmith. Mr. Kleinsmith, who was actually, he actually pled guilty and he got a slap on the wrist. And amazingly enough, he's still allowed to practice law. So that says a lot for the American Bar Association. So that says a whole lot about the American Bar Association. In a document called The United States of America versus Kevin Kleinsmith, it's criminal number 20-CR-XXX, parentheses XXX. Not really sure why. It talks about Kevin Kleinsmith's background. And let me see if I can find the plea. Because that wasn't the plea. I think that actually might have been. It lays out the charges against Kevin Kleinsmith, to which he pled guilty. So if you can go ahead and read this for yourself, this again was a fraudulent act, and it was a criminal act. The fact that he only got a slap on the wrist is a little disgusting. So, as you can see, there was no Trump-Russia collusion. And you could also take a look at, you could also take a look at additional reports. I'm blanking out on this gentleman's name. I don't know why, but sometimes it happens. But the whole thing with the Trump-Russia collusion was a setup from the very beginning. And what it really indicates is that the FBI and the DOJ are racketeering, influenced, corrupt organizations. They're disgusting. It's disgusting how this can happen. But this did, and it's all documented. It's all there. And the people who listen to this podcast will be in the know. The people who listen to this episode will be in the know, but many people will not. I've had this discussion many times with people. I've told them about the transcripts, and I would say to them, well, did you look at the transcripts? They'll say, no, I don't have time. So they have time to listen to propaganda, but they don't have time to find out the truth. Again, that's why I do this. That's why I'm doing this. These might not be the most exciting podcasts in the world, but they are chock full with information, and I am trying to teach people how to look at some of these issues. So, with that said, thank you very much for listening, and I bid you a fond arrivederci.